What has God asked humans to manage? Hello and welcome again to Good Word. We are journeying through a series of lessons in which we are talking about stewardship, an old-fashioned word, which actually could be updated to be something along the lines of manage or management. I'm happy again to have my conversation partners, Matilda Fry and Brent Berglund, Old Testament and New Testament profs, and I am a theologian. We have an interesting question today. What has God asked us to manage? And I would like our discussion to be as comprehensive and wide-ranging as possible here. We could pick out a few verses, but if we think of the Bible from the beginning on to the end, what are some of the things that are justifiably ours to manage as far as God is concerned? I'd like to hear your comments on that.
In the story, in the beginning in Genesis, God speaks to man and woman and says, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, rule it. And the responsibility that man is given in that part is to be in charge of creation, of a good creation. And I cannot imagine what a beautiful picture this must have been in the beginning of time, in the Garden of Eden, where man was put in place like a king over this earth, over all creatures, over everything that God had made.
So you think there were weeds in the Garden of Eden, Matilda?
I don't think there were weeds. Genesis 2 tells us they had not grown yet.
As somebody who tries to grow a garden, I always derive a spiritual lesson from weeds. It reminds me that Adam and I are going to have a conversation one day.
Thorns and thistles are a result of the curse,
And it's funny because in our valley, you know, we have no rain from May until September, but the weeds can grow to 6 feet with no rain, but your plants struggle. Anyway, so you looked to the story of creation as one of the places where God commissions humans to tend the earth. Is anything significant about the word tend? Is that an English word that has any relevance?
The word I think that is used there is the word that is used for a person who is truly in charge. It is the mashal. He is the king.
Oh, okay.
And he governs and rules. But it is the king according to God's will. And last week we talked about what kind of king that was.
Yeah. Remember? I'm still thinking about that one, by the way. Yeah. And by the way, I want to make this, and this is a little aside here, but the mandate is not gender specific in Genesis, is it?
It is not. It is for both.
Yeah, both of them. So it's not not Eve does one thing and Adam, they both have responsibility. Yeah.
Both are in one.
Yeah. What do you have to reflect on here, Brent?
Yeah, I'm skipping over to the New Testament as well, that after the fall of Adam and Eve in the garden and the entrance of sin into the world and all that comes with it, the good news is that God did not leave humans out of the redemption picture, but it says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 that God has entrusted us with a great treasure in what he calls earthen vessels. In humanity, we have the treasure of the gospel being lived out in our experience, and then we get to share it as well. We are entrusted with the good news of what God has done in this world. It's our job to tell and to show what he's doing.
So this is getting interesting, because on the one hand, Matilda, you talk about the care of the planet in a sense. And by the way, before I move to yours, we should just reflect on that you could make an argument that Christians should be very good environmentalists.
Certainly.
Definitely.
In the big picture, not exploiting the earth. And it is a sad story that some people have read that text to justify using whatever is here however they want, and they tear up the world. The world should be cared for, and it does thrive when it's cared for. I have seen some fields that were badly treated, and then somebody took them over and treated them well, and they really blossom. But let's go to your passage. That actually is one of my favorite texts, Brent, that we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And, of course, those of us who associate with the Bible think of the Dead Sea Scrolls when we think of that. Those were pretty good treasures. But in the ancient world, those clay jars were the storage vessels where all the good stuff was, maybe even gold and silver if you buried it in the ground. But food, grain, I don't know what else they kept in there. But
They would keep wine, juice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But the earthen vessel piece is the one that gets me, is that you realize this is saying that God, the God of the universe, has given to frail humans a charge of shepherding what I would sometimes call the mysteries of God. You know, how it is that he is acting to redeem us. And by the way, when you were talking a little minute ago, I was struck by the thought about the establishment of the tabernacle. I think you mentioned that in a previous lesson, Matilda. I think one of the foundational truths of the tabernacle is that God did not distance himself from the predicament of humans. But he said, I'm setting up my tent in the middle of your mess.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And when you have a problem, don't run away from me. Mm. Come and see me. And there is a means, there is a mechanism, if I can use that word. There's a way in which your problem can be solved, and it's linked to sacrifice, right? So it strikes me as very odd, in a very sad way, that we today, when we do wrong, we run away. Mm. We think, oh no, God's going to get me, I'm going to run and hide, okay? And the natural reaction is to run and hide, but the story of God is, don't run away, come. I'm not mean, mm-hmm. I'm not hostile. I don't like sin, but I do like the sinner, and I have a way of solving the problem. Any thoughts on that?
I'm wondering about the sanctuary then. Matilda, I'm wondering about Israel as a beacon to the world then with this picture. Were they not stewards of the temple and that message of a saving God who comes looking for sinners? And were they not supposed to invite the nations to come?
Surely. Before that, Leviticus, the book of Leviticus, the book that speaks directly to that place, to the sanctuary, to the tabernacle, opens with the words that when God called out of that tent of meeting, he called and said, whoever come. It's an invitation to come into his house, into that place. Whoever, everyone of the people who lived surrounding this house was invited to come in there with their mess, as you call it. So the sacrificial system was an invitation to bring it into that beautiful, magnificent, rich place. And in the end, at the end of the year, it was messed up.
Yeah.
It was a place.
I don't like to think about that.
Yes. It was a place that was the most dirty, the most filthy, the most, we could even say, the most stinky place in the world.
Bloody. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And then on the Day of Atonement, afterwards, it was all cleaned.
Yes.
Wow, that would be a very, very powerful visual statement, wouldn't it?
But that theme is not abandoned in the New Testament, because the book of Revelation ends with mm-hmm. the same call. Whoever is thirsty, let him. Whoever is longing for something they don't have, come, and I will satisfy that in the new temple, in the mm-hmm. New Jerusalem, right? Mm-hmm. So apparently God has been giving humans, entrusting them with this message of grace and goodness to share with the whole world. I'm wondering how well we do as Christians.
So we are to steward the world. We are to steward the grace of God. What else are we to call? On to manage
my family. I'm okay. Called to manage those people that have been given to me, my children, my spouse, those.
Now, what do you explain? I mean, I know you're, but what does that involve?
Managing, right? Doesn't mean ruling over. It means taking care of and providing for and giving what they need most.
Making and nurturing, sure that, caring
nurturing,
for
making
them,
sure my children have clothes and a good education and opportunities to make mistakes so that
and
they can grow.
And access to a parent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we talked about the sanctuary in the creation story, after God finishes all work, the sanctified time is the Sabbath. And when we read that passage, all of creation was part of God's work that was finished on this Sabbath, and God celebrated it. When you then come to the Ten Commandments in the book of Exodus, and you hear God giving the Israelites whom he had freed from slavery, and he speaks about the Sabbath, he speaks of that family. He speaks in terms of family language to them. He mentions all the family members, you and your son, your daughter, your male servant,
and
your
female
servant, even the stranger should be
and
part.
And your animals.
Yes. All creation, all beings that God has created should be part of that family that now this free person is in charge of. Mm. He is a steward for all.
So you see the Sabbath as an element that has to be stewarded in a grand sense, yeah.
I see the Sabbath as the messenger for a great invitation and a great responsibility that man is given to be put as a responsible person for others.
Wow.
He becomes a person within a relationship, not only to God, but to people.
And are we not then stewards of time there? Because the commandment says,
yes,
you shall work 6 days.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a command as much as the resting part. And sometimes we forget that you will labor 6 days.
Yes.
We love a two-day weekend, but God commands
to
be stewards.
I once preached a sermon focused on the 6 days shalt thou labor, not on the rest part. But, by the way, I read years ago that the word husband originally was house band, the one who bands a house together, whose responsibility it is to make sure that the family is well cared for. There was another one you mentioned in conversation before we started taping this, Matilda, the management of self. Would we include that, the management of self?
In the Sabbath commandment, you have a list of a complete household of 7 members. And the first one is you. You is the one who needs to be first in that list. And I would see this as part of that responsibility that I have towards myself. I need to understand who I am in the first place in relation to my God, in relation to the people that I live with. And if I know who I am and I can manage myself within that perfect relationship, that's where I see the you placed in there. If I don't know who I am first, how do I relate to others? How is that possible?
And I think we would all agree that when you manage yourself, it's a great blessing, not only to you, but to those around you, because then they don't have to manage you. And, you know, when you have to manage somebody else, life becomes very difficult. Yeah.
So. You know, we haven't mentioned money and wealth, but I think that's something we're given to manage, as well as our abilities. We're to care for those as
well. What about our reputations?
Something worth guarding, something worth maintaining. I think the Proverbs say that a good reputation is better than silver and gold.
Yeah. So when we think of stewardship, we should not just think of money. That's the tendency, and sometimes in even our discussion we focus on money because it's the commerce engine of life. But we should think of this very broadly, that whatever asset there is, whatever ability, whatever thing we have in our hands, we should take care of it well. Health would be included in that. So. Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed this. You guys have some good insights, and I appreciate those. So my thanks to you, Matilda and Brent, for your contributions. Our thanks to Jared Miller, our engineer, and our thanks to those of you who listen to The Good Word faithfully. For Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.